Tabitha's words.
Good morning, everyone. So, today I'm going to talk about busyness and Zazen. Okay. So, what's the date today? The 14th. So we're reaching the end of the year. Yeah, the calendar year, the way we mark it. It's so interesting, isn't it? Like every day is the end of a year, but we have these times. It's like something in our bodies that say, "Oh, it's getting dark. It's going to start. It's going to change soon." It's like there's something in us that recognizes this as the end of something and the beginning of something. So I think it's a good time to stop and reflect on what's important to us. And I think it's also a time to think about how we get busy. There's this saying in Zen, the one who is not busy. But I don't know about you, but I tend to get really busy on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of ended a couple months of like, and I thought, how do I get so busy? You know, what is it about being busy? It's important to recognize that I think there are times when doing a lot is just the way it is, right? Sometimes, you know, we have work and an elderly parent and, you know, just stuff. And that's just the way it is. So we need a lot of support during those times, a lot of fellowship to help us, to carry us through and help us remember. But it's also important for us to think about how we mindlessly allow ourselves to just go full throttle, pulled by habit, by superficial comfort. We can drift away from or even actively reject what Tsukiroshi calls our inmost request. So it's really interesting to pay attention to how we do that. And I was thinking about a quote, one of my favorite quotes. I have quite a few, actually, that's usually attributed to Thomas Merton. And you all know who Thomas Merton was? Anybody not know who Thomas Merton was? Okay. He was a monk, a Catholic monk, who was also a really beautiful writer. And when he was a young man, he wrote his autobiography, which is always pretty interesting for a young person to write their autobiography, which became a bestseller. And he later kind of rued it, I think, because it presented monastic life in this kind of heroic way. But he also, as he progressed, wrote some really beautiful, beautiful books on contemplative life and very down to earth. And he cared a lot about the world. So anyway, that's who Thomas Merton was. And this is a quote. "To allow ourselves to be carried away by the multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything, is to succumb to violence. For it destroys the fruitfulness of one's own work because it kills the root of inner wisdom which makes it fruitful." So I want to say this is attributed to Thomas Merton, but actually it was written by a Quaker author whose name I cannot find again. So I just want to say, you know, when you see things, quotes by this famous person, it's good to dig a little deeper because sometimes they don't want you to think they said it. They're not trying to rip somebody off. It's just it kind of has a life of its own. So anyway, you want to hear it again?
Yes.
"To allow oneself to be carried away by the multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything, is to succumb to violence, for it destroys the fruitfulness of one's own work because it kills the root of inner wisdom that makes it fruitful. So let's look at this a little bit. She said, huh?
Is your recorder on?
I think so. Yeah. It says 550, 551. It's doing little things. So, to allow ourselves. So that means that often this is an unthinking thing. It's like we're not in relationship to the many demands on us. We're just rolling along. We're allowing habit or shoulds or fantasies of who we should be or inflation about who we are, neglecting our body, all of these things. We allow ourselves to be carried away by multitude of conflicting concerns. Do you ever have conflicting concerns? You know, I have this, and I have this, and I have this. And our modern life is so complex that it's really, should I do this? Should I do that? Conflicting. To surrender to too many demands. Many demands on our time, on our hearts, on our energies, right? To commit oneself to too many projects. Has anybody in the room done that besides me? Oh, there's so many good things to do, or so many things I should do. To want to help everyone and everything. This is a bodhisattva vow, right? We say, I live for the benefit of all beings. I want to commit myself to the benefit of all beings. But what he's pointing to is how that can become frantic instead of truly fruitful. So to be carried away by these things, by the multitude of conflicting concerns, too many demands, too many projects, wanting to help everyone and everything, like, no, is to succumb to violence. That's a pretty strong statement, isn't it? It means that we're, you know, violence is like, harm, powerful harm. And the violence comes because it destroys the fruitfulness, the wisdom that is the root. We get carried away into busyness, into feeding something, instead of returning, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. It kills the root of inner wisdom, this kind of busyness. And, you know, it can seem that our busyness is for the good, right? Or we can measure our worth by how much we do. Anybody ever done that? It's especially interesting when people say, I'm so tired. I do this sometimes. I'm so tired. And there's like this little sneaky part that's like, I'm good because I'm tired. I do more than you. Or I do more than I think I can. Or. But this is the small self's measure of worth. You know, I have to prove myself to myself and the world. You know, and then of course there's the ranking of how tired you are. Have anybody been in? I'm more tired than you. I'm working harder than you. Doesn't matter if my work is fruitful, but I'm doing more, my God. This is the small self's measure. This is the deluded self-measure. It's a kind of rabbit hole that can suck our life. Can we just suck us into another realm where we wake up and say, whoa, how real am I being? How human am I being? To taste the wisdom that is fruitful and life-giving, we have to commit ourselves to a path that carries us in a different way, that carries us into our life, not measured by these standards. Or maybe we could say that carries us into a breadth that can include these measures but isn't fooled by them. You know? When we do this, we can come to know ourselves to be more than any busyness can measure. And then that changes things. That does away with this violence. So this is a way of staying close to our inmost request. Even when we can't really articulate what that inmost request is, you know, it's not like we can put it, you know, on a little post-it note. It might be much more mysterious than that, much more like, why am I doing this? Something. And sometimes I have words and sometimes I don't. So I think, in a sense, our inmost request is revealed to us as we engage with discovering what our inmost request is. It's not like we work really hard and get really busy to figure out what our inmost request is. And then we say, I got it. That's just more of the same. So this intimacy, this listening, this effort, this commitment to stay close to our inmost request is not just one more project to distract ourselves with. It's a different kind of effort. So when we dedicate ourselves to staying intimate with our inmost request, we realize that that's the key. We make it real. I was noticing, you know, some meditation centers, you kind of go in and you're like really quiet and you sit together and then you leave. And one of the things that was really important to Shinchu and I is that we build in relationship. So we sit together and then we have tea and everybody's chatting and talking and relating. And then we have a Dharma talk. And then everybody is chatting and talking and relating. And today we're going to have a potluck, which everyone is invited to. And there's something about that rhythm that keeps it real. It's not some special divided off place where you go. It's like you move in and out of silence, in and out of study, in and out of this. It's all practice. So we want to come to know more and more deeply, day by day, this wisdom that we can't claim, we can't attain. Wisdom is quiet. This is another little post-it note I have up in next to my desk. Wisdom is quiet. So to taste it, we need to have times when we're quiet, at least for a while. We return to stillness, to the deeper realms of our being, we could say. We are curious there. We're listening there. As the Jodo Shin folks say, we listen so that we might hear. And we open to the depth in that. So another way of saying this is that we sit zazen. Yeah. And we place the spirit of zazen in our ordinary life. So when we sit zazen and we get up and we're chatting, zazen is not ended. Practice is not ended. We hit the bell. It's not over. when we greet one another, when we introduce ourselves to one another, when we welcome one another into this place, that is the spirit of Zazen as well. And we sit down sometimes and we're quiet. So Dogen has a lot to say about Zazen, and there's many ways to approach it, but none of them express the reality of simply being. But we use language. It's fine. Katagiri Roshi says, you have to say something. Even if it's inadequate, you have to say something. So the first thing that I want to emphasize today is that we, in Zazen, we simply stop. Literally. We sit down and we stop. We cease the effort of making, building, figuring out, problem solving, negotiating deals with life. We stop and we practice just this. This is not easy, right? But even the not easy is included. We're not going to be something other than we already are. I had this image of a locomotive, right? So we're busy, 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 like, you know. And then we say, well, I'm going to sit Zazen. And then we think, it's like everything's going to come to a screeching halt. But the weight of our lives, the weight of our energy carries us along. So our thinking, our problem solving, all that. So if we have a fantasy that Zazen is like, it's not happening. No. So the energy that we put in our lives is like stoking a locomotive or like a steam engine, right? You know, you're like, the coal. Like, have you seen those old movies of the, even like cartoons, like where they're dumping it? Like, that's what we do a lot. We're like, we're going to fuel this locomotive. Got to go down the tracks. Got to carry all this goods to some other place. So there's this energy that's going to keep going. It takes time to slow down. And we need to know that Zazen is not about... Zazen is whoever you are in that moment. So if you're rolling along, you're rolling along. But if you take the time to sit Zazen regularly, you understand that there's a stillness that's beneath the rolling along. And sometimes the locomotive slows down and stops, and wow, isn't that nice? And sometimes it doesn't. And that, too, is Zazen. Unlike some other forms of meditation, our practice is not about getting into a particular place. We say this over and over again here, but I think it's really important that we hear it. It's the lived experience of getting there or not. There is always, even if we're busy, in our busyness, the one who is not busy. And when we sit Zazen, we have an opportunity to maybe get to know that one. So we know the value and beauty and peace and healing that comes from stillness. And when we can experience that, that is really lovely. It changes us. We see things differently. But it's not the point. The point is to stay intimate with our inmost request. And we express that when we sit ourselves down. Again, Katagiri Roshi said, you know, when you pay attention to your life, you notice that it's a very heavy responsibility being human. You have to sit down sometimes. So, we have full acceptance, maybe, sometimes, of this locomotive blasting down the tracks, of the stillness that's beneath it, of the one who's like shoveling, of the one who is not busy. And in our zazen, we come to taste stillness occasionally. We're not avoiding anything. We're not managing it. We're listening. We're allowing. We're cultivating a sense of returning to the balance that's within our own being. We return again and again and again and again and trusting ourselves, right? And trusting and trusting. So it's simple. Zazen is simple. It's difficult. But it's simple. Just come back. Again and again and again and again. Just as we are. And when we do this, we undo the violence that Father Merton was talking about. Undo that. It's natural. Honzen Seki says, "The water flows from the high mountains, seeking its own way. This is the Buddha Dharma. The Buddha Dharma is the great natural way. The rain flows, the wind blows. The water flows from the high mountains, seeking its own way." We can trust this. This is entrustment. This is trusting ourselves to Zazen. The water flows from the high mountain seeking its own way. We don't have to pump it. It's natural. This is the Buddha Dharma. The Buddha Dharma is the great natural way. Rain flows, wind blows. So when you're sitting, the wind may be howling. Still, it's natural. You can trust that. So I just want to encourage us as we reflect on this end of the year time that we commit to Zazen, that we commit to paying attention to busyness, that we allow busyness to fade. We're active when we need to be active. You know? If something needs to happen, do it. Then sit down for a while. As we stay close to this inmost request, our wisdom eye becomes less confused. This is really important. I want to leave you with one quote. I may say a few things about it. We chant this regularly here. It's called the Fukan Zazengi, points for how to practice Zazen. This is the last paragraph. "Please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed for groping for the elephant, to groping for the elephant, do not be suspicious of the true dragon. Devote your energies to a way that directly indicates the absolute. Revere the person of complete attainment who is beyond all human agency. Gain accord with the enlightenment of the Buddhas. Succeed to the legitimate lineage of the ancestor Samadhi. Constantly perform in such a manner, and you are assured of being a person such as they. Your treasure store will open of itself and you will use it at will. Please, honored followers of Zen." That's us. "Long accustomed to groping for the elephant." You know the story where the men are groping for the elephant and somebody says, well, it's a wall because they're touching the ear, and somebody says, it's a tree trunk because they're touching the leg. So we're all groping for the elephant. We're accustomed to groping for the elephant. And he says, "Do not be suspicious of the true dragon." This is what Thomas Merton is pointing to. What's beyond? What's beneath this violence that we perpetuate, this busyness that we perpetuate? What is the true dragon? So I've told the story before, but there's the story that this is based on is this fellow who loved dragons and made lots and lots of dragons. And so the dragons got together. Up in the sky, they got together and they said, this guy really loves dragons. We should go visit him. So he's in his workshop making dragons, like lots of dragons, making dragons. And then the dragon sticks his head in the window and he freaks out. Right? It's like, no, these are I'm making dragons, but when the real dragon comes to visit, it's like fear, suspicion, lack of recognition. I believe this is what Thomas Merton is pointing to. We get so busy that we don't recognize the true dragon. We have to sit down. True dragons kind of sneak up on us a little bit. Please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not be suspicious of the true dragon. Devote your energies to a way that directly indicates the absolute. Devote your energies to a way that keeps returning you again and again to your inmost request, to that which is deepest, the stillness, the deepest sense of you. Revere the person of complete attainment who is beyond all human agency. Today I'd say, that's our true self. We don't need to mess with it with busyness. You know? Human agency. Creating. It's already there. Gain accord with the enlightenment of the Buddhas. Gain accord is like resonance, right? We're informed by, changed by. Succeed to the legitimate lineage of the ancestor samadhi. Understand that you are carried by, you are informed by the deepest realization of all the Buddhas and ancestors. Constantly perform in such a manner and you are assured of being a person such as they. Just keep coming back, sit zazen, speak with respect to one another, care about your life. Guaranteed. Your treasure store will open of itself and you will use it at will. So these are the truths that we can taste and return to when we stop and realize that our busyness is not our worth. And we can see what we do in a new way, act in a new way. So I suggest we all reflect on this over the next couple of weeks and make a commitment to it.